Within the Fermi paradox lurks many questions, which leads to many possible solutions. I know of well over 100 of them, some viable, some probably not the case. But one such solution is the famous rare earth hypothesis that postulates that Earth is simply a rare type of planet for any number of reasons, and that the situation here may be sufficiently different from most terrestrial worlds that the conditions for life aren't actually that common, and for that life to reach a state of technological intelligence may indeed be incredibly rare. This may be one of the more viable solutions, because there is at least some data to back it up. After all, Earth has a moon, whereas none of the other terrestrial worlds in the solar system have large moons. The presence of the moon, however, is linked with life. It creates tides and moderates Earth's spin to such a degree that this planet would not be as stable in climate as it is without the moon. And that's saying a lot, since this planet isn't all that stable long term. It's very nearly frozen over in the past, even with the moon. At the same time, however, it has to be said that the Earth was not always the lone terrestrial planet with surface water in the star system. Mars also had it, and Venus probably did as well. And that would seem to suggest that water worlds like Earth are not rare. But there is another aspect here. The other terrestrial worlds also seem to lack plate tectonics, and that may be far more of a factor in supporting life long enough for the rise of intelligence than we might have previously thought. In a new study presented in Helsinki by Manuel Scherf and Helmut Lammer of the Austrian Academy of Sciences earlier this month, they detailed that the balance of plate tectonics and carbon dioxide and oxygen may limit how long a planet can remain habitable. And if it's not enough time, complex life may never have a chance to develop. Simple life may still be common, but the planets it might exist on don't remain habitable as long as the Earth has. And that is the point of rarity. The first thing that's needed in this framework is the right amount of carbon dioxide. You need enough to sustain photosynthesis when it arises, and you also need it to trap heat and prevent atmospheric escape. But you also cannot have too much of it, because it can trap too much heat, and you end up with a runaway greenhouse effect, essentially Venus. Also, too much CO2 can be toxic, so there is a right amount that Earth has. Plate tectonics directly regulates Earth's CO2 levels through the carbon-silicate cycle. But there's a further problem. The cycle is a double-edged sword, and it will be one of the things that eventually kills Earth. Eventually, plate tectonics will trap and subduct enough carbon dioxide to cause photosynthesis to shut down. This is something that will happen within the next billion years, and in fact, could start becoming a problem in as little as 200 million years. But the point is, we made it. But had that process unfolded faster than our evolution worked, this world would have never saw a technological civilization. It was very situational and time dependent, and it took 4.5 billion years to get to this point. But that may equally have never happened if evolution had taken longer to yield intelligence. Another point raised by this group was that you also need a nitrogen-oxygen dominant atmosphere. This has been raised before within astrobiology, that while you do not need oxygen for life itself, you do need it for advanced intelligence. There are a few other elements reactive in the way that oxygen is, and that is the brain's main energy source. No complex brain, no technology and intelligence. But again, there is a balance here. If you drop oxygen levels below about 18% on a planet like Earth, fire shuts down. It's the same problem aquatic life faces living in an ocean. Without fire, you can't smelt metal, which means you do not have the means to create technology and advanced tools, even if you are intelligent. Earth's oxygen level is 21%, but if you go much above that, you run into the opposite problem. Too much oxygen means rampant fire, which if bad enough, can reset a civilization. And we've seen this with Earth. Earth originally had little oxygen. Life still arose in that environment, but it was simple. Only through the advent of photosynthesis did the great oxygenation event occur. Oddly, this saw the death of the original life that arose here on the surface, as oxygen was poisonous to them. But they still live in oxygen-poor environments, often deep below the surface of the Earth. But Earth's oxygen levels after that rose, but varied rather wildly. During the Cambrian period, for example, the oceans were alive with complex organisms, but the oxygen level of the atmosphere was only about 5-10%. There was a time when there was no fire on this world. It only came with sufficient oxygen. By the Devonian, it had risen in a pulse-like fashion to about 15%. But by the Carboniferous period, it was above 25%, and in fact may have peaked to as much as 35%. As an aside, if you were to travel back in time, you actually would be able to breathe that, at least for a while. Eventually, you might see some effects of oxygen toxicity, but you could stand there and breathe it at sea level. Higher altitudes would be more comfortable, however, than they are today. But you'd have a problem. The Carboniferous period had abundant plant life that was causing the dramatic oxygen levels. And getting a lot of plants around with a lot of oxygen means fire. The Carboniferous period, which was about 359 to 299 million years ago, saw apocalyptic wildfires, both because of the increased vegetation and oxygen, but also a general lack of efficient decomposers to break down dead plant material. This essentially led to a fire world that human civilization, had it evolved then, would have had major problems with. Think orders of magnitude worse than the wildfires we deal with now. Interestingly, the team ran a group of different models for biospheres with alternate oxygen and carbon dioxide levels, along with the lifespans of those biospheres. They also assumed that advanced technological civilizations could only arise only after a sufficient amount of time and evolution, and used that to come up with an educated guess on how close the nearest civilization is to us. The number they came up with in their framework was 33,000 light years away. That would mean that there are indeed, or were, multiple civilizations in the Milky Way, but they tended to be very distant from each other. Indeed, it's not likely we could detect a civilization with most technosignatures that we've thought of to look for at that distance. Radio, for example, would be untenable due to the amount of energy needed to produce a signal that would be detectable at that distance, even with a truly giant radio telescope. But they also determined that such a civilization would need to survive for at least 280,000 years to have any kind of reasonable chance of existing at the same time we do. And of course, there is no guarantee whatsoever we will last another 280,000 years in order to be someone else's alien civilization existing with them. So the solution to the paradox here is simply that all aliens are too far away for us to see them. But there may actually be a far greater problem here that may shut down the Fermi paradox entirely if it holds. And the problem may actually be methodological in how we look for exoplanets. This involves the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, or TESS, and how its data was being interpreted. The telescope works much like the Kepler spacecraft did. It looks for dips in light as planets pass in front of their parent star, transits. A team at the University of California, Irvine, found that the presence of a neighboring star could be throwing the TESS data off regarding exoplanets, in that it may make an exoplanet appear to be blocking less light than it actually is. This would give the illusion that an exoplanet is smaller than it actually is. When looking at past exoplanet discoveries, the team found literally hundreds of exoplanet detections that may have incorrectly calculated the size of the planets. This is a problem because it means that we actually have found far fewer Earth-like planets than we thought we did. This is a problem because we really do not have that many candidates for other Earth-sized worlds in the first place. Now that may be reduced to very few. In fact, out of all of the exoplanets TESS has detected, only three were similar to Earth in composition, But this new finding would mean that all of them are actually larger than Earth, basically super-Earths. And there has been some talk about any terrestrial planet that's larger than two Earth masses is unlikely to be habitable. And given that the closest we have to Earth in the solar system are Venus and Mars, you can see how it can get complicated, because Venus went runaway greenhouse before it could have developed an advanced civilization, and Mars dried out and lost its atmosphere before it could have developed an advanced civilization, if you go by the metric of how long it took us to get to civilization. So those planets simply did not live long enough. And if Earth-sized planets in the habitable zones of stars are rare to begin with, then you have solved the Fermi paradox, because that would mean the nearest coexisting civilization would be even further away than 33,000 light years. We would not be alone. We just should not expect to see anyone else. But none of this has any bearing on microbial life and biospheres, those the universe may yet still teem with. Still, though, this may also mean that terrestrial exoplanets tend to be Haitian worlds, large ocean planets, more often than they are Earths. Ocean planets, once again, are fine for life, but not great for civilizations because of the fire problem. And it may also be that Haitian worlds are not good places for life to arise, as evidence is pointing towards life arising on land, rather than at hydrothermal vents in the ocean. And recent work has also shown, through modeling, that Haitian worlds may be really transient and lose their water rapidly, making stable ones long-term rare. Interestingly, this also goes both ways. Detections of planets that were deemed unlikely to have life because they were too small may, in light of this finding, end up being the size of Earth. So it's possible we might replace one set of Earth-like planet detections with another. But then comes that other question. What if they do not have plate tectonics or a moon? The fun thing here is that all of these ideas would immediately go out the window if SETI ever picked up a radio signal that can be proven to be of alien origin. One detection ends the entire debate, and indeed, the Fermi paradox. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier, currently eyeing Earth suspiciously by looking down. We can already say that this planet has unique attributes. For example, if the universe is finite, then this is the only world to have ever produced a David Bowie song, among many other things. If the planet itself is rare, music in the universe must be exceedingly rare, and there is no cantina band in a hive of villainy on a desert planet, or a greatest hits album of the Dirges, of Glorkhan the Mellifluous. Well, at least we sent them some Chuck Berry, and be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.